And now, back to John Stashower. This is NBC Sports Radio.
John Stashower show for Monday night, NBC Sports Radio. I don't get to go to a lot of movie premieres. I'm not a big shot, but I did get invited to one on Saturday night. I got a chance to see the HBO documentary that debuts tonight called Glickman, about Marty Glickman. Jim Friedman did the documentary, wrote it, directed, produced it, even voiced it. He joins us here on NBC Sports Radio. And Jim, you there was a panel afterwards, you and Marv Albert and Bob Costas, and you said something I thought that was interesting. Because I remember when Marty died, I think it was, 2001, I was doing a radio show, and, you know, I was like, oh, Marty Glickman died. We gotta talk about Marty, and we got to get Marv Albert on. And I remember my producer, who was a younger guy, not from New York, very knowledgeable about sports, and his reaction was, who's Marty Glickman?
Yeah.
So you spoke a little about that was one of your motivations in putting this together, to kind of tell Marty's story, right? Because a lot of people aren't aware of it, right?
No, I worked for him when I was 17, producing his radio show on WNEW, one of the first all-sports call-in shows in the nation, by the way. And when I went to school in the Midwest and later settled in California, and they, you know, I would talk to people about, you know, I once produced Marty Glickman's radio show, and the response would be, as you said, who's Marty Glickman? And I was stunned. I couldn't believe, outside of New York, so few people had heard of him. And I always felt that, you know, if I could, to say nothing, by the way, of his incredible life story, and if I could remedy that even a little, the film would have been a success.
Well, one of the amazing things about his, you know, he had this great sportscasting career, but before that even started, he was a football star at Syracuse and a track star. And for those that don't know the story, he was on the 1936 Olympic track team in Berlin, where Hitler was there, and he was to run in the relay, and the night before found out that suddenly he and another Jew who was on the relay We're not going to run. You obviously did a lot of research into this. What's your best guess on what exactly happened, on why Marty Glickman did not run in the Olympics?
You know, there are many stories about this. And, of course, when history is 70 years old or longer, 75 years, it's tough to know who to believe. But there was one camp that believed it was simply track politics, and that it was the assistant head track coach, Dean Cromwell from USC, was just getting his two USC runners in. And there was Marty's version, which was which Marty did not have at the time, by the way. In 1936, he didn't know about possible anti-Semitism then. He learned about it later, because some people believe that the head of the U.S. Olympic team, Avery Brundage, who later was proven to be a known Nazi sympathizer, and in fact was the head of the International Olympic Committee in 1972, and when the Israeli athletes were massacred and murdered, he refused to stop the games. So there is proof of that. And Marty has always maintained that, you know, these were the Nazi games of Adolf Hitler, espousing the myth of Nazi Aryan supremacy. He was watching all of these black American great athletes like Jesse Owens and John Woodruff and Ralph Metcalf just crush his myth of German superiority, and the idea of two Jews standing on the victory podium, and it was almost a foregone conclusion. They were favored by 15 yards. They said the only way they would lose was if they dropped the baton. Many people believe that Avery Brundage wanted to spare Adolf Hitler having to see that. And 2 years later, when the Nazis were building the German embassy in Washington, D.C., they awarded the construction contract to Avery Brundage's company. Now, I'm not saying that's specifically a payoff, but, man, it's suspicious.
Yeah, Jim Friedman is with us. The documentary Glickman on HBO starting tonight. So there's that side of Marty Glickman's life. And then after he gets out of Syracuse, he kind of stumbles into sportscasting. And, you know, I think people have to realize, right, Jim, that this was the day and age before TV, radio. I don't think we see that anymore, right? Except for someone like Vin Scully, who, of course, predates what's going on now. But the relationship of a broadcaster to a specific team, and for Marty, for most of, more than anything, I think it was the Knicks, right?
It started with the Knicks. It depends how old you are. For my father, it was the Knicks. For me, it was the New York Giants. For my younger friends, it was the New York Jets. It depends where you were, but you're absolutely right. Back then, television just was not as prominent. Home games were blacked out. Like, if you wanted to see a New York Giants home game, the only way, if you didn't have a ticket, was to listen to Marty Glickman. People used to say, did you see the game? Yes, I watched it on radio with Marty, because he painted these word's eye pictures. As Larry King said, he was television on radio.
You know, when I was a kid, and before I was even in the business, I used to marvel. I said, well, geez, Marty Glickman's the big-time guy, and he's doing, like, whatever it was, the Giants or the Jets. And then I would put on, like, Channel 11, a station in New York, and he would be doing...
WPIX.
Yeah, he'd be doing a heist. He'd be doing New Rochelle against Iona Prep. And I didn't realize until watching your film is that, you know, he wasn't doing this for the money. He just felt like he wanted to give... some exposure, right, to, like, high school kids.
What happened was there was actually an article where he said there were a lot of articles that sort of condemning the youth of the day. And Marty just saw, another side of this. And this is a guy, he was at the peak of his career. This was his schedule. Friday night he was doing the Knick games. He was doing Yonkers Waste Race Saturday night and the Giant home games at football on Sunday afternoon. And he found time in the dead of winter to go out to some, freezing high school for 16 years and do the high school game of the week. But not just to show people that they were great jocks. At halftime, he used that as a forum to bring on the Glee Club, the Choral Society, the debate team. He wanted to expose the public to the great things kids were doing. He also worked extensively with the Police Athletic League and also... mentored so many people. Anyone who came up to him, and those who didn't, sometimes in the business, he reached out to them and offered his criticism, and in the most positive way to help make them better.
Yeah, of course, the mentor to Marv Albert, and then so many have come after that. I just want to give one Marty Glickman story. And I was talking to Sean McDonough about this the other night when I saw him. Marty, you did these Ivy League football games.
That's correct. He had retired, he still occasionally, was it Penn, I think, or Princeton?
He did like an Ivy League game of the week
public
broadcasting. The guy had so many gigs. And Sean McDonough, who of course most people are familiar with, ESPN, was just out of Syracuse, and we were friends at Syracuse. He was the sideline reporter. And I was doing play-by-play of Yale football on the radio. So they come into New Haven, and I said, just the night before the game, I was talking to Sean, and he goes, well, we're going out to dinner. Come join us. So I get to sit next to Marty, and he's regaling stories. He's telling us that his first engineer was Marconi and, some great lines like that. So I always think of this, Jim, because you know how when you're at a restaurant and they bring you the wine, and whoever ordered the wine, they pour a little wine, and you drink a little to make – only time in my life, Marty tastes the wine and says, I don't like it.
That was Marty.
Does that sum up Marty? You know him a lot better than I did.
He called a spade a spade, and, he was very honest, sometimes brutally honest to the detriment of his own career about what he thought, because he saw broadcasting as a sacred profession, and he wanted everyone who followed in his path and in the profession's path to be the best they could possibly be. And by the way, no ego whatsoever, reveled in people's success, as Bob Costas says in the film. The other thing, go on, please.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, even for Marty Glickman, it was about the purity of sport. I have two young boys, 14 and 11, and, to talk sports with them, you have to deal now with steroids and attacks on women and DUIs, and Marty Glickman was about that primal feeling of having a catch with your father and being so proud as he looked in, as you saw yourself in his eyes as you caught the ball as a little boy. That emanated from his broadcast. And despite what happened to him in Berlin, I realized the heart of my film was what happens when an 18-year-old's dreams are crushed by racism and prejudice. Do they become bitter or do they triumph in life? Marty Glickman not only triumphed, he used sports as a means to transcend those divisions created by race, class, and religion. This was a very special man, and I am so proud I'm able to share his story with the American public tonight on HBO.
You talked about, you know, no ego. What would you think his reaction would be if he saw the documentary? Do you think about that as you put it together?
The thing that influenced me, you know, he was so about economy of words. So when I wrote the narration, I used as few words as possible so Marty would be proud of me, just as that's how he taught me when I would get the scores off the wires and I was 17 working for him. You know, he wanted very simple, straightforward language. And I think he would be very proud. His entire family was there at the premiere, and they all came up to me. And, you know, you're always worried because this is my take on their father. But they all came up with tears in their eyes and were so thankful. So I believe Marty would have been very, very proud of what I did.
Jim, thanks. We appreciate it.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate your time.
Jim Friedman, again, it debuts tonight on HBO. It is called Glickman. I've seen it. I highly recommend it. We go from that to Mike Tyson, Lamar Odom, believe it or not. It's coming up next. John Stashower Show, NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com.
NBC Sports Radio.
This is Charles Woodson, future Hall of Famer. And when I'm not out making plays, I'm listening to NBC Sports Radio.